The Imitation of Christ by Thomas A. Kempis. Part 23. Book 3, 31st chapter. To find the Creator, forsake all creatures. The Disciple. O Lord, I am in sore need still of greater grace, if I am to arrive at the point where no man and no created thing can be an obstacle to me. For as long as anything holds me back, I cannot freely fly to you. He that said, "Oh, that I had wings like a dove, that I might fly away and be at rest," desired to fly freely to you. Who is more at rest than he who aims at nothing but God? And who more free than the man who desires nothing on earth? It is well, then, to pass over all creation, perfectly to abandon self, and to see in ecstasy of mind that you, the Creator of all, have no likeness among all your creatures, and that unless a man be freed from all creatures, he cannot attend freely to the divine. The reason why so few contemplative persons are found is that so few know how to separate themselves entirely from what is transitory and created. For this indeed, great grace is needed, grace that will raise the soul and lift it up above itself. Unless a man be elevated in spirit, free from all creatures, and completely united to God, all his knowledge and possessions are of little moment. He who considers anything great except the one immense eternal good will long be little and lie groveling on the earth. Whatever is not God is nothing and must be accounted as nothing. There is a great difference between the wisdom of an enlightened and devout man and the learning of a well-read and brilliant scholar, for the knowledge which flows down from divine sources is much nobler than that laboriously acquired by human industry. Many there are who desire contemplation, but who do not care to do the things which contemplation requires. It is also a great obstacle to be satisfied with externals and sensible things, and to have so little of perfect mortification. I know not what it is, or by what spirit we are led, or to what we pretend, we who wish to be called spiritual, that we spend so much labor and even more anxiety on things that are transitory and mean, while we seldom or never advert with full consciousness to our interior concerns. Alas, after very little recollection, we falter, not weighing our deeds by strict examination. We pay no attention to where our affections lie, nor do we deplore the fact that our actions are impure. Remember that because all flesh had corrupted its course, the great deluge followed. Since then, our interior affection is corrupt. It must be that the action which follows from it, the index, as it were, of our lack of inward strength, is also corrupt. Out of a pure heart come the fruits of a good life. People are wont to ask how much a man has done, but they think little of the virtue with which he acts. They ask, is he strong, rich, handsome, a good writer, a good singer, or a good worker? They say little, however, about how poor he is in spirit, how patient and meek, how devout and spiritual. Nature looks to his outward appearance. Grace turns to his inward being. The one often errs, the other trusts in God and is not deceived. The 32nd chapter, Self-Denial and the Renunciation of Evil Appetites. The Voice of Christ.
My child, you can never be perfectly free unless you completely renounce self. For all who seek their own interest and who love themselves are bound in fetters. They are unsettled by covetousness and curiosity, always seeking for ease and not for the things of Christ, often devising and framing that which will not last, for anything that is not of God will fail completely. Hold to this short and perfect advice, therefore. Give up your desires, and you will find rest. Think upon it in your heart, and when you have put it into practice, you will understand all things. The disciple. But this, Lord, is not the work of one day, nor is it mere child's play. Indeed, in this brief sentence is included all the perfection of holy persons.
The voice of Christ.
My child, you should not turn away or be downcast when you hear the way of the perfect. Rather, you ought to be spurred on the more towards their sublime heights, or at least be moved to seek perfection. I would this were the case with you, that you had progressed to the point where you no longer loved self, but simply awaited my bidding and his whom I have placed as father over you. Then you would please me very much, and your whole life would pass in peace and joy. But you have yet many things which you must give up, and unless you resign them entirely to me, you will not obtain that which you ask. I counsel thee to buy of me gold, fire tried, that thou mayest be made rich. Rich in heavenly wisdom, which treads underfoot all that is low. Put aside earthly wisdom, all human self-complacency. I have said, exchange what is precious and valued among men for that which is considered contemptible. For true heavenly wisdom, not to think highly of self, and not to seek glory on earth, does indeed seem mean and small, and is well nigh forgotten, as many men praise it with their mouths, but shy far away from it in their lives. Yet this heavenly wisdom is a pearl of great price, which is hidden from many.
The 33rd chapter, Restlessness of Soul, Directing Our Final Intention Toward God.
My child, do not trust in your present feeling, for it will soon give way to another. As long as you live, you will be subject to changeableness in spite of yourself. You will become merry at one time and sad at another, now peaceful, but again disturbed, at one moment devout, and the next undevout, sometimes diligent, while at other times lazy, now grave, and again flippant. But the man who is wise and whose spirit is well instructed stands superior to these charges. He pays no attention to what he feels in himself or from what quarter the wind of fickleness blows, so long as the whole intention of his mind is conducive to his proper and desired end. For thus he can stand undivided, unchanged, and unshaken, with the singleness of his intention directed unwaveringly towards me, even in the midst of so many changing events. And the purer this singleness of intention is, with so much the more constancy does he pass through many storms. But in many ways the eye of pure intention grows dim, because it is attracted to any delightful thing that it meets. Indeed, it is rare to find one who is entirely free from all taint of self-seeking. The Jews of old, for example, came to Bethany to Martha and Mary, not for Jesus' sake alone, but in order to see Lazarus. The eye of your intention, therefore, must be cleansed so that it is single and right. It must be directed towards me, despite all the objects which may interfere.
The 34th chapter. God is sweet above all things and in all things to those who love him. The disciple. Behold, my God and my all, what more do I wish for? What greater happiness can I desire? Oh, sweet and delicious word, but sweet only to him who loves it, and not to the world, or the things that are in the world. my God and my all. These words are enough for him who understands, and for him who loves, it is a joy to repeat them often. For when you are present, all things are delightful. When you are absent, all things become loathsome. It is you who gives a heart tranquility, great peace, and festal joy. It is you who makes us think well of all things and praise you in all things. Without you, nothing can give pleasure for very long, if it is to be pleasing and tasteful, your grace and the seasoning of your wisdom must be in it. What is there that can displease him whose happiness is in you? And on the contrary, what can satisfy him whose delight is not in you? The wise men of the world, the men who lust for the flesh, are wanting in your wisdom, because in the world is found the utmost vanity, and in the flesh is death. But they who follow you by disdaining worldly things and mortifying the flesh are known to be truly wise, for they are transported from vanity to truth, from flesh to spirit. By such as these, God is relished. And whatever good is found in creatures, they turn to praise of the Creator. But great, yes, very great indeed, is the difference between delight in the Creator and in the creature, in eternity and in time, in light uncreated and in the light that is reflected. O light eternal, surpassing all created brightness, flash forth the lightning from above, and enlighten the inmost recesses of my heart. Cleanse, cheer, enlighten, and vivify my spirit with all its powers, that it may cleave to you in ecstasies of joy. Oh, when will that happy and wished-for hour come, that you may fill me with your presence and become all in all to me? So long as this is not given me, my joy will not be complete. The old man, alas, yet lives within me. He has not yet been entirely crucified. He is not yet entirely dead. He still lusts strongly against the spirit, and he will not leave the kingdom of my soul in peace. But you, who can command the power of the sea and calm the tumult of his waves, arise and help me. Scatter the nations that delight in war. Crush them in your sight. Show forth, I beg, your wonderful works, and let your right hand be glorified, because for me there is no other hope or refuge except in you, O Lord my God. End of part 23.